Hello, I'm Mr. Movies of the Famous Film. Hello, I'm Mr. Movies of the Famous Film Twitter.com, and this is the Mr. Movies Podcast.
They charge you to game it. Game it.
We are a group of people who will sit for hours, days, even weeks on end, performing some of the hardest, most mentally demanding tasks. Over and over and over. All for nothing more than a little digital token saying we didn't.
We'll punish ourselves, doing things others would consider torture, because we think it's fun.
We'll spend most, if not all, of our free time in maxing the stats of a fictional character, all to draw out a single extra point of damage per second.
Many of us have made careers out of doing just these things.
Flogging through the grain all day, the same quest over and over, hundreds of times to the point where we know every little detail, such that some have attained such game of nirvana that they can literally play these games blindfolded. Do these people have any idea how many controllers have been smashed? Systems overheated, disks and cards destroyed in frustration, all to later be referred to as bragging rights. These people honestly think this is a battle they can win.
They take our media. We are already building a new one without them.
They take our devs. Gamers aren't shy about throwing their money elsewhere or even making the games ourselves. They think calling us racist, misogynistic rape apologists is going to change us. We've been called worse things by prepubescent 10-year-olds with a shitty headset. They picked a fight against a group that's already grown desensitized to their strategies and methods, who enjoy the battle of attrition they threaten us with, who take it as a challenge when they tell us we no longer matter.
Our obsession with proving we can after being told we can't is so deeply ingrained. From years of dealing with big brothers and sisters and friends laughing at how pathetic we used to be, that proving you people wrong has become a very real need, a hung reflex.
Gamers are competitive, hardcore by nature. We love a challenge. The worst thing you did in all this was to challenge us. You are not special, you are not original, you are not the first. This is just another boss fight.
Lloyd, I forced you to watch Ready Player One.
Mr. Movies, there is a sickness that is spreading across the nation and the world, and and governments seem either unable or unwilling to stop the spread of this horrible thing, and its effects are not immediately apparent. And I am speaking, of course, about gaming culture and its wretched avatar on the material plane, which is Steven Spielberg's 2018 film Ready Player One, which is the worst film that has ever been made. So I'm a poster, you know? I consume content all day, so I was kind of expecting this to just kind of, you know, like water off a duck's back. But it was so incredibly insidiously, like, I later on I'll make an argument that it's actually an evil film, but
ooh,
at the very least,
okay,
it's like, it's so bad. It is so bad. And you forced me to watch this, so... What do you have to say for yourself, Harry?
All right, so, first of all, sorry. I thought... I have people in my life who deeply respect the book. And what I have to say to them is I'm very happy that you have something that makes you happy. You are probably a happier person than I will ever be. That being said, this movie... All right, so, a couple things went through my mind as I watched this. One... Mm. This movie hates its audience. This movie,
you got to imagine. Like,
it did. Steven Spielberg fucking hates you. Because he was like, here's your slop. You remember Battletoads? Well, guess what? They're going to be fighting Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, no. Harry, I was doing the soy face the entire time for the entire 2 hour and 19 minute run time. Just every time there would be a reference to some lukewarm pop culture schlock that drifted across my consciousness when I was eight. Just who is this for? First of all,
thank you so much for bringing that up, because that is literally the first thing in my notes is who
Jesus
the fuck
Christ.
Is this movie for?
Oh man, what was the first like this, everything from the soundtrack to the design of the whole thing, like, just there's nothing really here. There's nothing here for I just don't understand it. It exists nowhere, and yet it exists everywhere. You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. Because, like, this movie obviously is, like, the most pandering thing to Gen X. But, like, this movie literally made me think that Gen X is worse than the boomers.
Mm.
Like, the boomers are destroying the planet, but Gen X brought us Ready Player One. It's impossible to say which is worse.
Yeah, is Spielberg a Gen X guy? Does he count as Gen X?
I think he's technically a boomer.
Okay.
But he definitely was pandering to Gen X. And this is like a weird thing that I've seen. There aren't that many video game movies, thankfully. And there's even less that are movies that are influenced by the tropes of gaming. The ones that I can think of immediately, I've hated all of them. And I mean that sincerely. I hated Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Buh.
I hated, it sucks because it's like, I get why people like it. I'm so happy you like it. Not for me. Ready Player One, dog shit. Pixels, somehow worse. You know, it's like, I think the only one that's really stuck was Wreck-It Ralph. And I think that I enjoyed it more because I have an 8-year-old. So it was like, oh, she's happy. But that's a thing. I have an 8-year-old.
But wasn't Wreck-It Ralph less about... It wasn't about gaming culture in the way that, like, Scott Pilgrim or this was, you know? Wreck-It Ralph seemed to
not.
Be... It was about, you know... Was that Pixar or DreamWorks? It was probably DreamWorks.
I think it was DreamWorks.
Yeah, but it's just kind of like the normal DreamWorks plot about, like, friendship and, you know, getting over your insecurities. You know, it's the same thing. It's not... I don't think it's good, but it's certainly not just the... You know, the navel-gazing, just placing upon a marble pedestal of the unexamined past. And, oh boy, I mean, I was, like, it ruined my night. Like, I want to say, like, I watched this last night. I started at about 7 p.m. and, like, 9:30 rolls around, and I'm just kind of, like, I'm devastated there on the couch. And
That's another thing. This movie is literally 2 hours and 20
it's
minutes long.
So long.
It could have been 20 minutes long. Oh. Again, this movie has no respect for the audience that it was made
Absolutely
for.
Absolutely not. No.
I mean, it really is indicative of, and I it's almost becoming a meme that I apologize for bringing up Marvel in each episode before bringing up Marvel in each episode. But there's a weird trend in action movies where, a forgotten genre, I guess, would be the tight 90 action movie. And we're just extending longer and longer into, like, these action movies that are 2.5 hours to 3 hours long now.
No,
this movie just kind of falls into that. It's just it's color, it's noise. There's literally 40 minutes of this movie that's just incoherent garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your brain literally cannot process that information.
There was a point when I turned, like, 27 or 28 when I started refusing to watch movies that were over 2 hours long, unless it was like extremely specific circumstances. Like, it had to be like a triple, you know, A+ recommendation from, like, a very trusted friend. Otherwise, like, I want to be in and out, like, 90 minutes. Like a story can be told well and concisely and in a moving way with good characters in 90 minutes. It can be done. It has been done many, many times. And if you go over that, there really should be a good reason. Like, there should be a good reason. And there is the inverse of reasons in the case of this movie. Like the movie pretends to be its own justification. And so on my podcast, Feeling Well, like one thing we talk about a lot is that the sole duty of a podcast is simply to exist. And, you know, which is kind of what sets podcasts, which is, listen, you work hard on your podcast, Harry. I know that. A lot of people don't. A lot of podcasts are just kind of like, you know, thrown off. And so they are, I would say, generally correctly regarded as like a somewhat lower art form than like cinema or like sculpture or music. You know, there is room for artistry inside podcasts. Sure. If you want to make that argument.
Sure, yeah. But for the most part, you're absolutely right. It's like, it's just the nature of the beast. You only have one way that you're consuming it, and it's through your ears. Mm-hmm. And, like, most of the time, people make podcasts because they're just fucking bored. Yes. You don't make, like, a piece of cinema if you're just fucking bored.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so, which is exactly what happened here. This is the laziest, most boring film, which just kind of drifts through a miasma of references, like just rapid fire from one thing to the next without any breaks, just like, and it's so dense with these references, and it's so satisfied with itself for putting so many references in that it just steamrolls any effort at like a dramatic arc or the establishment of any kind of stakes. It's a mess. I'm sorry. I've been ranting. Harry, please.
Like, no. You're right. This movie's an abomination, and I'm really happy that you brought up the reference after reference shit that happens, because I wanted to do a game with you, because I knew that this was mm-hmm. agony. I really wanted to drive home the point that you can't remember shit from this movie, so I'm going to be doing this almost game show sort of thing with you.
Okay. Oh, no.
All throughout this plot review, I'm going to be asking you for each character's name and the movie or video game that they reference whenever they come up. And each one that you get correct, I will personally destroy an Xbox remote control. But
you
each
mean
one
it?
You get wrong, I mean it. Oh. And each one that you get wrong or don't know is a child that I have to baptize into the holy waters of gaming culture.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't dare. Mr. Movies, I swear to gravy. Oh, okay. The stakes are higher than ever before.
I cannot wait. All right, so I think now's as good of a time as any to just dredge through the shit that was Ready Player One.
All right, let's hold our noses and dive right in.
The movie opens up with a very cool sequence. It's a reference using Van Halen's Jump, which carries us into the year 2045, where there are no more cities, it seems. It's all trailers stacked on top of each other. And if you aren't getting a delivery from a drone, you're wearing a VR headset and boxing gloves. They go on to talk about how we ended up in this apocalyptic nightmare, which was a corn syrup drought and bandwidth wars.
Sounds like a regular Friday night to me, folks. If I'm not getting my corn syrup and my sweet, sweet Wi-Fi, I'm liable to start chucking bricks at the local at the local telecom center.
Like a wine mom that has a pillow that's like, absolutely, don't talk to me till I've had my Chianti. but it's a gamer shirt that says like, don't talk to me unless the bandwidth mm-hmm. is 125 Mbps. And you're like,
where's my gigabit? Where's my gigabit? They
what
love
do
the
we want?
Folks.
Seating. When do we want it?
So this is how the world has been destroyed, is through. These are the only two named events. It's a corn syrup drought and a bandwidth riot.
Yeah, which means that gamers weren't getting their Sody Pop or Steam games fast enough, which led to the crippling of modern society.
And now everyone lives in these ramshackle towers where, like trailers and storage containers, and, you know, there's no more building code, there's no more municipal government, there's no more, except for one part of the municipal government, which we'll get to at the very end of this, but...
Yes, I'm so glad you noticed that shit, too. Yeah. I was like, of course that would make it to the end.
Again, you know, we'll just put a coin in the... in the jar for why this movie is evil, but we'll, you know, okay. Anyway,
yeah.
society is destroyed. Here we are in this ridiculous city. Pizza Hut is delivering pizzas via drones, so there's still some kind of functioning economy. There is money in some way. People don't seem to be starving.
There's this whole escapism that they have within this, which is kind of like the crux of the movie, which is like how nightmarish and hellish your life is. But luckily for them, there is a paradise that was created in virtual reality. It's literally called Oasis because Steven Spielberg wasn't trying. And it's the best video game ever created. You know, it's a VR headset that takes you wherever you want, living out your wildest fantasies, like a giant casino planet, or climbing Mount Everest with Batman.
What?
That's a action
with Batman. Oh, Harry, I am doing the soy face so hard right now. I am
holding both sides of your Nintendo Switch.
Uh huh.
Soy facing at the camera.
Oh, buddy, am I? I couldn't do it any harder if I tried.
This movie is less redeemable than most Marvel movies. You know, it's the loudest, most unparsable stream of color and noise I've seen since, like, the late-stage Transformer movies. Like, it's reference after reference of gaming culture trying to make multiplayer gaming seem like a truly cooperative event. Mm. Which is true, right, Lloyd?
one of my most hated aspects of this film is that it really kind of, like, it dares you to pick apart the logistics of how this would work, because, you know, you see the outside of people's various rigs. Like, to get into the Oasis, you got to have a couple of things. You got to have your goggles, you got to have your gloves. Ideally, you're going to have some kind of an omnidirectional treadmill to run on. So that, like, you know, you're in theory, you're like running around and like you're moving your actual limbs and like you're manipulating like objects in this virtual world. But like everyone has different levels of equipment. Like if you're very rich, like many characters in this film are, like, you have some kind of super like an amazing rig, and other people just kind of like have this kind of shitty, like, goggles, gloves, whatever, like they're doing it in their living room, and they're all supposed to be playing the same game. And we are not ever invited to like examine the, like, how something like that would work. A game in which obviously the mechanics of that would be so imbalanced, would be so impossible for any average Joe off the street to meaningfully participate in any way without just getting the shit blown out of them in no time flat. This could not exist. Nothing like this could exist. You know, imagine endless bandwidth. Imagine infinite bandwidth. This is simply not happening. But that's listen. What I've done here by engaging with the concept is I've fallen for their trap. I have engaged with gaming culture on the gamer's level, and that is the first piece of wisdom that I hope to impart to you here today. I'm sorry. Yeah. Please continue. God.
No, you're fine. That's so funny. You're like, God damn it, they made me think about gaming.
God. Christ.
The movie goes through the creator of the game's story. It's a guy named James Halliday, and then it shows that he died. But when he died, he created three different keys that will grant you complete and total control over Oasis. Again, some of the worst fucking writing. Lloyd, what was the theme of his funeral?
Very strange scene. He's lying down in his coffin, and then he Then he sits up and addresses the camera, and I'm seeing, oh, it's Star Trek themed. It's a Star Trek themed wedding.
It is Star
yes.
Trek.
Break that controller. Break that controller right now, Mr. Movies. I swear to God.
Hang on. I've got a pen and paper. I'm going to see how many children we're going to have to baptize in the cleansing waters of gaming culture versus remote controls.
Okay.
Right, hang on. Smash. We got one in the smash column. And then we have the baptize column.
Yes.
All right. We're
starting off strong.
Yes, we are. I'm proud of you. Because it was really weird. It was like a flower wreath of the Star Wars or Star Trek logo.
Yeah.
This movie's really grim, but not in the way that they intended. Besides people threatening to kill themselves because they died in a game, like a mom who almost burned her house down because she wouldn't take off her VR headset, with her child begging her to turn around before they lost their home. They also have these things called Halliday Scholars, which are PhD types that study pop culture.
You see, everyone starts the same, but the more coin you make, the more you level up. If you get killed, your avatar can come back to life, but you lose all your stuff. Everything you've ever worked for. All your money. Your clothes.
I can't imagine the damage the first 10 minutes of this movie did to you.
Oh, I had to listen in preparation for the podcast. Like, I'm going all in. Like, I am using the that acting method, you know, where you like where you allow yourself
like
to
Daniel
become
Day
immersed
Lewis.
In the world. Yes, yes. So in preparation for this podcast, like I've been, you know, like I signed up for a like a World of Warcraft account. Like I've
Jesus,
you know, I've started saying slurs. Like I've, you know.
I've started yelling at women for occupying the same space as me.
And Mr. Movies, I stink to high heaven. I haven't showered in weeks, all for the pod. But you know,
I imagine you wandering the forests where you currently live, and asking every single hiker that is in the beautiful mountains in the region where your hug's at. My first thought that I had with this movie at this point was that I don't know the difference between this movie and the Scary Movie spinoffs. Like, there's no plot to this movie other than find the keys. So they'll just be like, oh man, you need coins? What, with that something about Mary hairdo?
Uh-huh.
Which made me think, like, well, I mean, we brought it up before, but like, who the fuck is this movie for? Because this is presumably a kid's movie, right? Like this movie's just made for those brain-damaged Gen X freaks that point at stuff and go, hey, what if the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle said the fuck word?
Oh, God. It's exhausting. Like, it feels trite to even be, like, talking about the... Like this film was... It was dated when it came out. It was already... I remember the reactions to this film, and everyone was correctly dunking on it left and right. But I mean, in recent days, it seems like, I don't know, I feel like what this movie represents has become freshly relevant, let's say. And we can get into that more later. But
yes.
Please, let's continue.
All right, so this kicks off a whole car chase scene that gave me the worst vertigo I've felt since I watched Hardcore Henry, the POV action movie where a guy spins while shooting at stuff.
Ah, yes.
And in this race, Lloyd, they are chased by two distinct monsters. What are the names of these monsters, and what movies do they come from?
Okay, I remember King Kong from the classic film King Kong. There's a a large, big monkey.
Oh man, he's a big angry monkey.
Big monkey. Hang on. So, big fucking.
It's only in there for like 15 seconds, and it's meant to just wow people.
It's meant to wow you. Shit, I'm not gonna get it. It's not Iron Giant. Iron Giant was in it later. It's not Mechagodzilla. Mechagodzilla was in it later. Shit. God damn it. Was it like a Hydralisk from StarCraft or something?
It was not. It was the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Fuck. God damn. Like, same dramatic beat. Same essential. like, how was I supposed to remember the same dramatic beat twice in the same scene? Fuck, Steven Spielberg. You dumb piece of shit. Like, that's not how you design a scene. Like, it's the same obstacle. It's the same obstacle. I'm sorry. Like,
yo, no. And, no, it's great because you actually work in film adjacent, right?
Yeah.
So your insight into this feels good because when I was watching, I was like, why did they need both?
Yeah, right. No, like, it's, you avoid those monsters in the same way.
Yeah, the T-Rex doesn't even make sense in the context of a giant skyscraper city.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic
mm-hmm.
Park was like largely the savannah. Right. You know, it's right. King Kong. Whatever. In this race, there are three distinct cars from our main heroes. What cars do they drive?
All right. Well, they really made a big meal out of one of the characters calling one of the other characters McFly. So I remember the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Yes.
Was there a Batmobile in there?
Yes, there was.
There was a Batmobile. Ooh, I'm not. Ooh. Was it like. Shit.
This is so much fun.
Was it like, God damn it, famous car. It all sucked so bad and it was so fast. God, Mr. Movies, Christ. Was it Knight Rider? Like the car from Knight Rider?
It was not. God, it was the bike from Tron.
Really? The fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck you, Steven Spielberg. God.
Right, so,
all right, so that's two innocent children to be inducted into the wretched halls.
Four Xbox remote controls I will destroy.
It's small comfort, but I'll take it.
This is the most upsetting thing about this movie, ultimately. Like, instead of a plot, any sort of plot, any sort of stakes, it's just references. Mm-hmm. Like, after the race, there was this whole thing with the main character talking to a Twitch streamer, and they're doing a pop culture quiz off at each other about the founder's personal beliefs. And this led to one of the worst lines I've ever heard, which I will cut in here. Lloyd, would you like for me to say it to you?
Please, I just tear the Band-Aid off.
Some people can read War and Peace and see a simple adventure story. But some people can read the back of a gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe. What the fuck is this shit?
His favorite quote was from Superman. Some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story.
Others can read the ingredients on the back of a chewing gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe.
Lex Luthor. Cool.
I'm making such a face right now. You can't see me, but I'm making a face.
After this quiz off, I guess, we find out that the main character's aunt's boyfriend, husband, they aren't clear with it, bet the whole house on winning a race in the game, like in this game world, really, and have completely ruined their lives.
Yep. Aunt's boyfriend, played by the actor who plays the dad from The Witch. A very talented actor.
I literally have that in my notes. Yeah.
Like, you know, he's good. He's a good actor.
He's
I don't
great.
Remember his name, but like he is slumming it here. And
iconic
and he has
voice.
And he has bet their future on
a
death match, the mortgage. Yes, on this death match where like if your player character dies, then you lose all your assets. And you can't turn your bitcoins back into real money, and so the guy Wade Wallace, he comes home, he finds out that the uncle's ruined his life, and then there's like a very jarring transition to what exactly?
It cuts to our main character going back into the gamer world to go to the gamer library. Where he goes and he researches the backstory of the head gamer in charge.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned this already, but it is a a very important part of the world, that it is incredibly valuable as a citizen of this universe to have studied the ancient texts being like old movies, old video games, like superhero comics, and more specifically the stuff that this guy Halliday liked. It is played as kind of absurd and like, oh, isn't this wacky that like everyone has to know this guy's whole backstory and has to like examine his life. Like, it is just a world of I don't even know what you would call it. What would you call these people?
It's one step removed from how the weird nerds treat Elon Musk on Twitter.
Yes.
Like, this
yes.
is literally just like one step.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, they the reason why I say it's one step removed is none of them want to admit that his family had an emerald mine and fled South Africa in 1994. Hey, Lloyd, what was happening in South Africa in 1994?
What?
After this, they go, and then we find out our main character has literally obsessed over this James Halliday character. And it turns out that you can win this race that nobody's been able to win. You know, the one with the T-Rex and King Kong. Mm. And it turns out that all you have to do is, why can't you just go backwards? Now, Lloyd, who did he reference as saying, just went backwards?
Wait. Do you just have to go... Hang on. So... No, there was a fucking... It's not Superman, is it? It's not Superman turning the world back in time.
It's not.
Shit!
It's Bill and Ted.
Fuck. Oh, fuck that. Fuck that. God.
Oh, man. He goes, why can't you just go backwards?
Bill and Ted did it. I remember it now. Well, I remember it now, don't I?
Why can't we go backwards? For once, backwards, really fast as we can. Really put the pedal to the metal, you know? Bill and Ted did it.
Using this forbidden knowledge, our main character wins the race. He's the first person ever to do this and gets the first key, which, one, hard to believe. The first thing that I ever did when I was a young spry boy with his Nintendo 64, my parents got me like two or three games to play on it, and one of them was NASCAR 1998, I think. Mm. And literally the first thing that I did was I drove the wrong way and tried to kill my driver.
Mm. Yeah, because that's...
No, everyone would be doing
that. Because
you wanted
to have fun. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God. So this whole race sequence, I don't know if you were going to get into IOI later on, but at the beginning of this race sequence, we're introduced to IOI, which is a shady tech conglomerate, which, like the rest of this world, is kind of a barnacle on the legacy of James Halliday. And their whole thing is they are using immense corporate resources all to like solve this children's puzzle, and so
yeah, like billions of dollars in venture
capital,
and they have
lots of people on salary, like in these high tech suits that they use in the Oasis, and they are always constantly trying to win this race, and no one ever has. No one can do it. And so you've got the like the faceless kind of corporate guys, and they all wear the same uniform and they're all in the same car. So you've got kind of a faceless enemy that what's the main character's name? Parzival with a Z?
He's the Parzival, and his real name is Wade.
Wade.
But he goes by Z.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then
cool.
And then against IOI is like the cool like ragtag group of like Parzival and his friends and like and other like pro gamers who are in this race just because it's fun and for the lulls, etc. You know, and they are the unambiguous heroes, the unambiguous true heroes of this narrative, who are
the like, real troops.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly right. And they are, what do they call them?
Oh, shit. Is it the clan?
No. You can get clanned up. If you decide to join a clan in this world, you get clanned up, which is, I don't know, that sends off, you know, I don't love that terminology.
I know a lot of gamers who are probably clanned up.
They're horrible people, folks. So IOI Corporation, they are like, they've built an industry on winning this game. And they are the loyal antagonists for the remainder of the film.
And one of the darkest metaphors for the way that we perceive the end of the world, I think so, because like after this, you know, they get the key, the first of these three keys, which I mean, the end goal being you get all three keys, you become like the arbiter of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And IOI want to get all three keys so they can hyper monetize the game. And like specifically, they say that they'll take the source code of the Oasis and sell it up with, you know, like ad space. And they said they want to do 80% of your field of vision before it induces a seizure. And I thought this was funny because they're living in a post-apocalyptic hellscape. Mm-hmm. Capitalism clearly failed them, but gamers ultimately don't care. The only injustice a gamer can conceive of is their free game having an ad inserted into it.
Even after the end of the world, the bugbear at the end of it all is still microtransactions.
That's exactly
and day
it.
One DLC. Like oh my god. Ah, I didn't think about that. Now I'm mad again. I got mad. I got extra mad. Oh. This just keeps getting worse and worse.
So anytime that I see on Twitter, whenever people are like, so, is there any room in the revolution for gamers? Let me concisely say, no.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Get the fuck out of here. Pick up a shovel. Dig some ditches. Unironically, something you endorse, actually.
Feel free to check out back episodes of my leftist Let's Play called The Game Shiviks. It's on YouTube.
Oh.
Mistake. Now I'm going to tie you to these railroad tracks. This is serial killer behavior.
No, this wasn't my greatest mistake. My greatest mistake was...
Out with it! The train is closing fast!
Look at me. I'm the train conductor.
There you are. Aren't you a little bit young to be driving the train?
Be quiet. There's no child named Long.
My greatest mistake was not subscribing to the Mr. Movies Patreon on patreon.com.
Meow! What is that?
Constant project updates, polls for upcoming shows where you can control the episodes, and one new episode a week.
Wow! What a deal! That's good, and I should subscribe! Goodbye!
You should! Go to patreon.com/MrMovies now to start your subscription today! Where did he go? Did you seriously leave me? There's a train coming, sir!
This cuts to a scene with TJ Miller, of all people. And did this movie come out before we found out about TJ Miller?
Well before, yes.
Oh, it did? All right, good.
Yep.
There was a... Well, his character is one of these, like, 10-year-old characters that have never died. And he's being contracted to be a hitman to kill the main character of the story? Who gives a shit? I can't imagine the stakes ever being raised and having any sort of meaningful weight if it's in the fucking gaming world.
Yeah. And importantly, this is one of the only characters that we never see their real world counterpart. So this is a in-game only experience with this guy.
Which I imagine the character that would be the guy with a 10-year-old like gaming thing that's never died would look exactly like TJ Miller.
Well, sure. Listen, I guarantee you they shot a scene that was like that character dies and he's like literally in his mom's basement or something.
Yes.
And they cut that joke. I guarantee that exists somewhere on the cutting room floor. It's there. They would not have shot it. They would not have not shot it. Like 1,000%.
No, because they bring up that joke how many times? Like you're a 350-pound guy named Chuck in a basement or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, they absolutely film some like fat fucking guy, and then they're like,
"Yes." There's so much that's wrong with what's going on here. Like there are many levels. Gaming culture is a complicated enemy, Mr. Movies. It is not as simple as like good and evil. Like gaming culture is insidious, and it is patient, and we just gotta get it out of here. We gotta crush this shit. Let's keep going. Let's get to the heart of it.
Yes. They unfurl the scroll that comes along with the key that you get at the end of this. And they get a clue. It's something about escaping your past. Who gives a shit? And our main character goes to the gamer lounge and is a celebrity. Like, it's the lamest fucking thing. But so when this happens, next reference, he gets pulled aside by a character with four arms. I don't expect you to know the name because I don't know the name either. But something horrific happens to this character. What is it?
Oh, okay. Goro, the four-armed...
Holy shit, you get an extra remote.
I got... Okay, yes. Okay, so Goro from Mortal Kombat grabs our protagonist, pushes him through a portal into a little room, and there is an alien chest burster...
Yes.
That bursts out of his chest there, and then it kind of like nibbles up and it unzips, and it's the female love interest right in front of him. It was her the whole time.
Women, they're always doing this.
They're always doing stuff like that. They're playing games with you. Fellas.
Fellas, you know how sometimes your girl will pin you up against the wall and a chest burster will rip out of her body and eat her flesh? Come on, fellas.
That's just another Tuesday night. You know what I'm talking about.
Women be chomping.
Women be, and this okay. I had a kind of like I had a visceral reaction to this scene because it was like they really play this girl up to be like the ultimate gamer waifu. Like she knows all the references. It's like she's she'll scare you with an alien monster. It's like don't be scared, dude. Like. Don't you?
You're
think
in
this
a
is
video
fun?
Game.
Yeah. We're all just having fun.
They really try to hammer home the point that like gamers can find love too, because
that's the entire arc of the movie. What arc there is?
Oh shit! You know what? I have to read it for you because I don't know if you've ever seen this. Hang on. Right. I know exactly what I need to search to find it. It's called Loot Drop Wedding. All right, here we go.
Oh, no.
Ethan, with this ring, I take you to be my wedded husband. You are my best friend, and I cherish every day we spend together. Life dropped an epic husband, the rarest of its loot table, and I was lucky enough to win the need roll. We've had our ups and downs, but we've come through it all together, and there's nobody I would rather share my life with than you.
I'm just gonna say this. The cost of getting the new Xbox or the new PlayStation, you have to show like the proof that you've had a vasectomy. That's bare just for the good of us all.
After this, they go and they find, they study this creator more and more. And it turns out that there was a bit of a love triangle between him, his best friend, and his best friend's soon-to-be wife. And he never got to ask her out to the big epic dance.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of asking her out or anything, he did the standard Gen X thing of making a club in a video game and inviting her to go dance emote at each other. But who gives a shit? It's so hard to care about this movie. But ultimately,
when you really just kind of spell it out like that, like that happens. That happens online. Like
dudes are out like on there, Second Life,
like building fun like Minecraft houses.
to try to impress a girl. Like, that's happening out there. Of course they put that in this movie.
So ultimately what happens after this is he gets a quarter from the curator because he bet all his coin that this is the only reference to the woman or whatever. And the girl finds out that he's actually an epic introvert INTJ stare genius and agrees to go out on a date with him in the virtual world. So he gets invited to a dance and has to try on some outfits. Lloyd, name the three outfits he tries on.
Before deciding. Before deciding.
No, wait. There's three outfits he tries on. Two of them he tries on and fails, and one he goes with.
Okay. All right. Okay, we got the one he chooses is Duran Duran, I think, right?
No, but that is one of them that he puts on.
That's correct. We got Duran Duran. We got Michael Jackson from Thriller.
Jesus Christ, you were paying attention. Yes.
They just say this stuff. They put it out there. They cram it in, like, through your forehead. Some of it sticks. Some of it ends up sticking. Okay.
He even does a cute little Thriller dance, too, while he puts it on. So you really know what the Thriller was.
Oh, fuck. What's the third one? Is it, like, is it Devo?
It's Buckaroo Banzai.
Fuck that. Oh, really?
And that's the one he goes with. Yeah.
What even, like, what was Buckaroo Banzai? Was that like a music thing?
It's what a cult that? Movie.
Oh.
Buckaroo Banzai was from like 1984. And it's this like, it's called The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. And it was a W.D. Richter movie. Let me read you his entire plot breakdown. It's Dr. Buckaroo Banzai. With a physicist, a neurosurgeon, a test pilot, and a rock star to save the world by defeating a band of interdimensional aliens called the Red Electroids from Planet 10.
Oh, that's so epic.
This movie sucks, is what it is. Yeah, it's pretty epic.
That's so epic, Harry.
So dressed up like Dr. Buckaroo Banzai, they go to this club because it was a place that Halliday had created for his virtual e-date with his best friend's wife, who he was in love with, I guess. And they have a dance competition. How exciting. What song do they put on?
Oh, that would be Staying Alive.
Yes.
Staying Alive. Yes.
Bee Gees.
By the Bee Gees. Thank good. I did not have the Bee Gees. So, you know, you can just lightly crack that Xbox controller if you want.
Yeah. One of the sticks drifts.
Yes.
So whoever uses it, they'll be lazily sauntering over to the right while
that's right. Which is some, you know, for some, it would be worse than a fully broken controller. Controller.
Some would say a fate worse than death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This scene gets really weird because after meeting this girl for what, a day, he insists that he's in love with her. And he keeps on insisting it, even though the IOI have showed up and have started to kill people in this theater. In this, like, dance club. And the whole time he's being shot at, he's like, no, for real, I love you. Which has got to be the gamer's fantasy, right?
My name's Wade.
What?
I said my name's...
Stop.
Well, Buckaroo blows it. Shocking.
You crazy? You don't tell anyone who you are. You can't use your real name.
You're not just anyone.
You don't know me. You don't know anything about me. We've never met.
I do know you, Artie. I'm in love with you.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the whole scene, there's like an anti-gravity part of the dance club. And
yes.
they're dancing together and they're like flipping all around and like, you know, like she's making eyes at him. And it's like, oh, gamer waifu, I'm gonna smooch you good one of these days, or however it is.
Let me glomp
however
onto
it is they talk.
You.
I don't know. I need
how
head
does glomp
pats
make you feel?
From glomp out of context. It doesn't make me feel so good, Harry. I gotta say,
it sounds like
it
a wet
make me
sound.
Feel so
doesn't
good
it?
At all. Don't care for. No. Dry sounds only. Dry sounds only on the podcast. Anyway, so this object of desire, Artemis, is the character's name, and
yes,
You know, and there's a very important moment. Yes, yes. And there's a very important moment during the dance, right before IOI bursts in, where he wants to like meet her in real life. And
yes.
She's like, no,
and he breaks the cardinal rule of posting.
Yes, yes. Never tell them who you are. Never.
Yes, he doxes himself.
Tell them. Tell anyone online. Yes, he does the, you know, some would argue it's a Chad move to dox yourself. But in this case, it's considered cringe and he is canceled for it.
It is so fucking weird to hear you talk like this. It's so out of character. God, you were like literally just digging ditches before this, and now you're like, oh man, he gave her 1,000 Twitch bits, and she said, get yeah. to Epic F out of here.
And that's the tea. And that's the tea, and we're here for it, folks. Wade is able to defeat IOI using yet another reference, a Zemeckis cube, which is, I believe,
yes.
Something else from... that's another thing from Back to the Future, right?
I believe so.
I think it is.
It looks like a Rubik's Cube.
Yes, yes. So he's able to turn back time and escape from the villains, including TJ Miller's character, who's been listening in the whole time, now knows Wade's identity, and is preparing to deliver him a little jolt in the real world.
Yes,
Harry, please.
Yes, he is. They threaten to do a nuclear strike on Columbus, Ohio, it seems. And all because one guy's better at him than gaming, or better at him at gaming mm-hmm. than the CEO of AdCorp, I'm assuming, or the Mr. Microtransactions, my evil alter ego. And so uh-huh. a bomb goes off in his home because he has doxxed himself, and it kills his aunt and uncle. And I wanted to let you know, I did put this in my notes. This is where I realized that he was the character from The Witch. Because, like, I didn't get a good look at his face, because he literally looks like Diedrich Bader from Office Space.
Yes.
In, like, the first scene, because he's yes. got, like, this, like, for lack of a better term, he has, like, a white trash heart tattoo. And I kind of thought mm-hmm. it was Diedrich Bader, because their voices are somewhat similar. But, like, holy shit. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy who was in... I don't think I'm exaggerating. The best horror movie of the decade is also the abusive stepdad in Ready Player One.
His name is Ralph Ineson, by the way. That's the guy's name. I've just looked it up. He's good. He's good. Check out a better movie with him in it if you feel like after listening to the podcast. He knows his way around the old craft. I suppose.
Oh, it's after this, all of a sudden, the main character gets kidnapped by a guy who looks like Stone Cold Steve Austin and mm-hmm. is brought into the real world where he gets to meet Artemis IRL, his real-life cutie pie. And he finds out, wow, she's a pretty girl and likes video games. And her flaw that she said, you're going to be disappointed in me for, was the fact that she had a barely noticeable birthmark on the right side of her face.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
that was it, right? That was her.
Yeah, essentially,
conflict.
Yes. And then immediately Wade says, like, oh, by the way, I'm not disappointed. Just so you
know. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I still absolutely wanna just, you know, give you the spurs, but you know.
Ma'am, I think you're at least a 6 out of 10.
to clear up any ambiguity, would.
So this entire time, these two characters keep calling themselves by their gamer tags. And Lloyd, I need to know, what would you do if somebody you respected called you by your Twitter handle?
Ooh. Oh, boy. There's something like when I mean, poster's brain has been postulated about endlessly, but it is a real thing. And it is like sometimes you forget to turn it off, and you're interacting with someone in the real world, and like maybe it's someone that actually does like follow you on Twitter, and they're like, Lloyd, like please stop posting at me right now. Like there's no need for content right now. We can just have a conversation. It's okay. It's
Lloyd,
oh,
I'm
boy.
Hugging you. You don't need to riff it out in the replies. What would you do if on your gravestone they put your post that got the most traction?
Yes. Yes. Oh, it's always the worst, like, dog shit posts that I do. Like, it doesn't...
Same here. Holy shit. Yeah. I went, I'm not bragging. This is the weirdest shit. I literally did an offhand thing because I was helping my wife write a paper. She's in college. And, like, I'm, like, trying to help her, like, write this paper. And, like, I just, like, fire something off. There was somebody who showed that the police now have taser shields in, like, Missouri. It was something like that. And all I said was I just fired off, like, man, we, like, literally have to buy paper and markers for teachers. That's all I said.
Right, yes,
I fired that
this.
Off because I was just upset. Uh-huh. And then it takes the nation by storm. Man points out that schools aren't funded well, becomes hero to the masses.
Thank you for your service, Mr. Movies.
Thank you. And because nothing's happened for like half an hour at this point in the movie, they just go, oh, I figured out the next plot point, which is that they have to go to the movies in the gaming world for the next clue. And Lloyd, let me tell you how upset I was that I had to watch them just butcher The Shining.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
This is the worst of movie culture, really. How they just have to take only the memorable moments from something that is an icon of a genre, like The Shining, and just throw them all at you at the same time. Like the elevator of blood, the twins, the portrait of, you know, like that final portrait of the movie, the room 237 with the hot lady that's actually a bog witch, the snow maze, the freezer. All of it is shoved and thrown at you, and I'm not kidding, 30 seconds. It's incoherent garbage.
Yeah.
And I think that this is what bugs me the most about this movie, is we can joke about gamer culture being black-pilled at its core or whatever, which is honestly kind of true, but taking a work of art and being like, oh, I saw that. Here are the top 10 most memorable moments in movie history. It, with it, it just makes me, like, I see the forest for the trees. You know, I know this is all business. Like, ultimately, film is business. There's no way that we can get around that. But, like, let me pretend, just for a second, that all of this isn't just products being lobbed at me. And it's not just corporate surveys that learned how to target my exact demographic paying off really well.
Oh, boy. No, that scene was truly lamentable. Like, imagine, okay, in an alternate universe where instead of being thrown into like a video game version of a level where like you know you have to do the, I don't know, it's like you have to do a platformer, but it's The Shining now, and like you have to fight the zombie lady and you have to escape from Jack Nicholson, and you had to, and if you had to see this guy who was like you know, was kind of a savant, was struggling with social interactions, just fail to do so. Maybe that would have been interesting. I don't know. I don't think it would have played to this movie's audience. But I think there is, okay, the only generous thing that I will say about the entirety of not just this movie, but like gaming culture in general, is like a lot of this stuff happens because people are lonely, because people do have trouble making connections. And the way in which this film and like pop culture in general and the world at large kind of treats this stuff, it isn't addressed. It's just, it is marketed to, it is kind of, it is catered to, it is like, you know, it's monetized. And there is a sick kind of tragedy in that. A lot of this is quite genuinely sad in concept, but in execution in this film, it's just like, who is reacting to this? Who is like being given any kind of emotions by this scene? By this just recombinant, lazy, just loathsome scene.
It sucks because it's like you're spot on with that. We live in It's funny, I'm completely stealing Felix Biederman's talking point here, but it's like we're more connected than we've ever been, and we're also at the loneliest point in human history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like instead of using, I'm not saying this movie had to be this, because I mean there has to be your big blockbusters, and then there has to be indie movies, or however you want to look at it. It's like this movie could have easily addressed how lonely we are and the dilapidated conditions that we're in largely drive that loneliness, but instead it's like, isn't gaming amazing how it can make you forget all the woes of the world? It's like, no, we could get rid of the woes of the world and still have fun shit to do. Like the movie just stops at the fact of like, isn't it cool how you get those chemicals in your brain whenever it goes like, what? And the thing is purple instead of blue because purple's rarer than blue.
It's like, fuck, man.
It's like, this movie is like five steps away from being like, oh shit, this movie could have actually been leftist in a sense. But like,
right.
It's cynical Gen X, black-pilled, here's your slop, you fucking pig, now get out of here.
I mean, just think about how the movie portrays, like, choice. Just kind of choice in the abstract as just a unexamined, absolute virtue of the Oasis. Like, you can be whoever you want to be. Like, you can buy, like, any kind of, like, fun piece of bric-a-brac from any intellectual property that's ever existed. And that is shown as like this has allowed society to survive. Like the world has ended. Like everyone's plugged into these computers. And isn't it great that we have the solace of IPs from our storied past, and they're at our fingertips, and we can consume them, and we can make them part of us.
What's that famous quote that's like, it's easier to view the end of the world than it is to view the end of gaming culture. That's kind of how.
We've been living this close to each other the whole time.
Next door. Around the world, it's all the same in the Oasis.
For the record, I'm not disappointed. You know, you said I would be disappointed when I met you, but I'm not.
I've lived with it my whole life. You don't have to pretend.
Oh, God.
After a whole zombie ballroom scene, which wasn't in The Shining, I want to point out, they get the Jade Key. How exciting. This cuts to the big bad guys sending drones and trying to blow them up or some shit, I don't care. But the main character meets every single person from the game in real life, which is so exciting. One of them's wearing a Transformers hat, because that's what this movie is. Another one is a Japanese guy who's like a legit martial artist, we find out later on. Which, I'm sorry, a guy who games all day is, one, not that fit, two, does not have any other skills that he's honed that much. And then another is an 11-year-old in a van, and he goes, you're the most boss ass epic 11-year-old I've ever seen, sir. Have some Reddit gold. And
worst scene in the film.
Yeah, it really is, because I mean, I'm sorry, the optics of a bunch of grown people with an 11-year-old in a van running from the government.
It's okay though, we're gamers. Like, we're in the same gamer clan together. Don't worry about it.
You don't understand. We're family. The cops are just aerating your van.
So they sent every guy they had into that sector until they found the right fortress.
Show?
Yeah. I'm 11, so what?
His real name is Zoe.
But everyone else calls me Show. No big deal.
No, it is a big deal. Show, you're the world's most badass 11-year-old ever.
He knows.
Shut up, let him tell me.
Also, the main girl gets captured because of in-game gamer debt. So she has to become a virtual gamer janitor, I guess?
Yes.
I don't know, this movie fucking sucks.
Yes.
And also, I want to point out, there is still an hour left of the movie at this point. We are only halfway through the movie.
I'm so sorry, dude. My cats are expecting to be fed. Like, I figured, you know, I'd watch the movie, I'd have dinner afterwards. Like, my stomach is just gnawing. Like, But I realize, like, rather than like sate my hunger, rather than figure out my own human needs, I said to myself, Lloyd Howell, you finish this movie. You go through this, and you go through it now, because you've come this far, and you need to let this hit you head on. You need to let this wash over you until there's nothing left of you, so you can rebuild yourself stronger this time, and perhaps more discerning in the movies that Mr. Movies gets you to watch. But who knows? Who's to say?
There's no time for the stakes to be raised, too, by the way, in this movie, which is really funny. Movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes, but there's no time for, like, any sort of, like, theming to take place.
None.
There's no investment. They just get
None
raised
whatsoever.
Right away.
Yeah.
And because they immediately find out where Artemis is, where she, like, is. She's in this detention cell with, like, a chain to things and a virtual reality helmet forced on her head. I imagine this would be the equivalent of like torture to you. And they also find out by breaking into a corporate office and pointing epic guns at the CEO guy and making him go shit in his doo-doo ass. And Lloyd, this does not count for any points.
Okay.
What was the CEO's password to unlock everything?
Was it boobs man? Was it like B00B dollar sign man?
You were close. It is Bossman 69.
Oh.
B055 man 69.
Mine was better. That sucks.
If it was boobs man, I'd be like, hell yeah, dude. I'm on the CEO side. You know, microtransactions are all right.
They're all right. Yeah, man. This
movie has zero respect for its fan base at all. Like, I thought this movie would at least be fun, but it's not. Like, it's awful. It's boring, more importantly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a bunch of exercises in CGI with zero story written around it. And they just change the story whenever they feel like it. Like, what was searching for keys becomes removing a force field around a portion of the game? And a really weird rallying call for all the gamers in the world to show up and help them do it. I don't know. This is deeply embarrassing. And I mean, I just, you know the speech I'm talking about, right? Where he's like, gamers of the world, for too long we've been pushed in lockers and had our heads dunked in the toilets of society.
Oh, they're charging too much for skins, and they're doing day one mandatory paid DLC. And we have to, true Epic Gamers have to unite so that we can keep everything the same.
Hey, this free game that I play is trying to keep existing through the advent of skins that you purchase. What the hell, gamers?
What the hell? What the hell indeed? What fresh hell does gaming culture visit upon us today? Every day it's something new.
Oh, Lloyd, we're here.
We're here.
We're at the epicenter of schmexy, awesome, adorkable references. Tell me, I wanted you to tell me as many IP, really pieces of intellectual property that you could recognize here. But even I couldn't see through the fog of war that they probably spent thousands of dollars on each of these models to do so. I'm choosing to skip it because this is such a dog shit scene in the movie. Like,
it's a
we're
very
not going
bad
to
scene.
Yeah, it like it plays on in the like it's a fight, it's a giant fight and like in the background like the Iron Giant fights alongside Tracer from Overwatch and Master Chief against the mods, I guess.
There's some Master Chief, you got I think there's a Battletoad.
There's
you remember
Battletoads?
What else there was, I mean, okay. So importantly, there's no like Disney, like Marvel Disney.
None at all.
No. Wait, no. There's like, they had like Deadpool, right? There's Deadpool in there.
I don't know.
I think they did. I remember seeing that because like God, none of this is any, okay. Long story short, none of this is any good. They have replaced... They have replaced the society of the spectacle with the society of, well, okay,
what happens, like, what happens when a spectacle is not a spectacle? What happens when you see just, you know, incredibly, you know, well-rendered CGI depictions of fantastic violence and you feel nothing at all? Like, what is that? Like, what
like a corporate
override?
Malaise?
Yes. Yeah, like, yes. Something like that. When the stakes are less than zero, like when you're constantly cutting from the fight scene to just like regular guys, like okay, so everybody, by the way, everybody on Earth, or at least everybody in Columbus, Ohio, is now helping our protagonist defeat the mods, essentially.
Yeah, it is. I imagine this is what the, you know how, I don't know if you ever watched the show Jimmy Neutron. I think you may have been too old for Jimmy Neutron, but like.
Yes, and thank God.
Yeah. There's a thing when he goes brain blast and it goes in through his ear and you see all his brain synapses going. I imagine this fight scene is what like 40-year-old guys who wear Captain America shirts. I imagine this is what like thoughts look like. Because like ultimately it's just like a guy sitting in a completely empty room going, what if Superbad said that Sonic the Hedgehog was his best friend? That would be so epic.
Bring it in, guys.
Yeah, this kicks off a completely unwatchable fight scene. Like the Chucky doll fights 10 people and just like stabs them, and that's the comedy part. And then the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are punching the ghost from Pac-Man, I think. It's like at this point of the movie, I realize that I had purposely given myself depression. Like, and for what? The content? There's no content worth it.
Oh boy.
And I mean, like, shit. The big bad CEO goes into his final form, which is Mechagodzilla. Uh-huh. And this kicks off a huge fight scene between Mechagodzilla fighting two epic references, one of them being the Iron Giant, and the other being...
It was Gundam Wing. It was the Gundam Wing guy. Yes! It's the Gundam Wing guy. Throughout this whole scene, we're cutting back and forth between the Oasis, where we've got all these epic characters, you know, doing battle against the like the bad CEO and his lackeys. We're cutting back to IOI headquarters, where wherever like a huge epic explosion happens, we see all the employees like their little stations light up red, and they have to go like respawn. And then you also cut to scenes in the real world where H is like driving the van around, so they're in the van with the children, and Wade is in his computer game suit, and he's doing his best to win the computer game. And they look out the window and they see like everyone in the streets has their like shitty little goggles and gloves on, and they're participating in this fight. And so we're kind of building to a fever pitch.
That deeply disturbing scene. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of kids on the side of a road.
Uh-huh. Like children on the side of the road, nothing else to do. Like they've been inspired by this epic gamer moment, and they've taken up arms and they're willing to zero themselves out, which is to say to lose all their in-game possessions to help keep the Oasis the way it is.
Yeah. I meant to say this a while ago. The references for this movie aren't only dated, because, I mean, I imagine the source material was dated, but each person who dies, coins fly out of them.
Yeah.
Like, Scott Pilgrim did the same shit. Like, a guy gets uppercutted and coins fall out of him. And I'm like, who's this for? There's a whole shootout scene, too, which gets ended with another epic reference, which is, what weapon?
Oh, what was it like? Was it the BFG from Doom?
It is not. It's the holy hand grenade.
Oh, my brain blocked that out. That's not fair. That was it was simply too cringe to remember. I could not. When I was a kid, I grew up on a dirt farm, and I didn't have like cable TV. I didn't have internet for a long time. And you know, Papa Howell, he's like, Lloyd, you're a bad kid. However, I'm going to let you have this one kind of glimpse into the wider world. And that glimpse was, it was a CD of Monty Python sketches called Monty Python Lust for Glory. And so it's like a collection of sketches from like the entire Monty Python canon. It's got stuff from like Holy Grail, Life of Brian, whatever. And so I listened to this CD like many thousands of times probably. And I still have just like strikingly strong memories of Monty Python sketches just that will leap back into my consciousness. And so that was the experience of my life that was kind of closest to being like a true fan of something, where I like just engaged with something so hard that it like became a part of me. But in my defense, I was a child. I was an actual child. And then I got a little older and I stopped doing it. And, you know, but I still bear the scars. So really makes you think.
So you're telling me that you can be someone who is in their 30s and you don't have to make your entire personality saying references to things you watched as a kid?
I don't own a single graphic tee, Mr. Movies.
Wow.
Yeah. Not a one.
That's impressive.
Thank you. I think so.
In order to win the last key, they have to play a game, which is?
Adventure.
Yes,
the game
is
called Adventure. Yeah.
You got crush it. This. Which you beat by just kind of wandering around. Now, mm-hmm. Lloyd. As a man who has adopted the life of a forest nomad type, you know, digging mm-hmm. ditches, mm-hmm. uprooting stumps, why wouldn't you want to wander around aimlessly in a video game? Like, this to me seems like your type of game. You just kind of walk around, look at stuff.
Okay. Well, I could do that. I could boot up the old Atari and wander around, or I could plant potatoes in the real world.
That does sound...
Or I could dig a tangible thing. I could dig a ditch and fill it with gravel so that my basement doesn't flood anymore. You know, I could go chase the porcupine who lives in my barn away again.
That's what we call a mini boss.
That's what
these are real life things.
How dare you bring that into the world?
How does that make you feel? Like the guys who will be like, I just ran a mile today. Level up.
You know, guys, don't you ever feel like the assistant manager is like the mini boss before the final epic? Listen, again, why do people game? Because the world sucks ass, and you need to, like, listen, guys, if you're out there, if you're listening. And you're gaming right now. I get it. I get why you're doing it. But just come back. Come back to us. You know, it doesn't have to.
I imagine you spun the chair around, your jacket's over your shoulder, and you're sitting on it straddling it.
Oh, yes, yes. Guys, you know what the real epic loot crate is?
It's a hard day of manual labor.
It's a hard day. It's the actual crate that you kind of pry open with a pry bar, and what's inside? It's enough parsnips to last you the winter, you know. And I think that's pretty epic loot. Yeah.
Like, I've definitely known you for like a year, right? But like in my head, you literally are like a 90-year-old Irish fisherman who like only speaks in limericks and like talks about like finding enough radishes to keep the wife and kids happy for 3.5 weeks.
That's right. Oh boy, I did just buy a 50-pound sack of flour, so I'm stocking up. Yeah, it is. It's.
You're gonna make a big old pancake.
One single pancake, and I'm gonna eat that pancake till spring. Till spring come.
In the game, the evil CEO sets off a nuke and kills literally everyone, which is what we call this in the movie is called a Lloyd Howl. Because what he does is the bomb goes off and it kills every single gaming character to a point where they can't log on again, mm-hmm. except for one, which is our beautiful main character, who, when handed a quarter for betting his whole coin stash on knowing this one piece of trivia about the game's creator, turns out it was a one man, an extra life. And boy, is it everything a young, spry, young adult, I guess? He's 18 in this, right? Like, he's definitely an adult.
I think so. He's probably like 27.
Yeah.
The actor is probably 35. The character is probably 27. But like,
yeah,
for you could have fooled me. Acts like an 18-year-old.
He beats the game and gets the last key, which starts off this whole real-life chase sequence where, like, all this is happening in a van. I don't know. At this point, there's so much color movement on the screen that I wanted to go outside and give up on this podcast. Mm. Like, this movie made me seriously consider, are movies even good? Like, maybe Lloyd's right. Maybe we should just flee into the woods. And after making his way into the hidden vault and refusing to become the sole proprietor of the video game, who gives a shit? I don't even know. This cuts to the CEO trying to run away somewhere. And you know what? Fuck it. I'm ending this. that's Ready Player One. But there is an end scene that you want to talk about that I'm very happy that you picked up on this,
yes,
too.
Yes.
The big justice call. The CEO gets his comeuppance. And Lloyd, what is it?
Okay, so throughout this entire film, like, IOI is de facto, like, it seems to be the government. Like, they seem to be like the police. There's a scene where IOI shock troops, like, raid a they call it the rebellion. It's the people that Artemis are kind of running, and they're against IOI. And these riot cops break in, and they presumably break a bunch of skulls and stuff, you know, dressed in full, like, police riot gear. At another point, they use their drones to murder a whole city block with bombs.
Yes, they do.
And
zero repercussions, too.
Zero repercussions. But for whatever reason, in this last scene where Wade has finally, he's gotten the egg which gives him control of the Oasis, and evil CEO guy, he's hot on his tails, and he's got a gun. He's got a real life gun, and he's gonna get that egg from Wade no matter what. But who should show up at the last minute to stop him? It's the boys in blue. Folks, the last, yeah, there is,
it's
apparently
the Columbus PD,
the Columbus Police Department, which still exists in this insane, like, hyper-capitalist shantytown. The good old municipal PD shows up, and they just put this guy in regular old handcuffs and put him in the back of a regular old police car, and wouldn't you know it, the evil is defeated. And Wade can form the board of directors with his good friends. And the moral of the story, I hope you don't mind me saying, Mr. Movie, is the moral of the story is purported to be that you gotta spend a little time in the real world, because sometimes sometimes you can ask your epic gamer waifu out on a date, and she will smooch you back. And so Wade and his friends, they now own the Oasis. But the big change that they make is they shut it down 2 days a week. They shut the Oasis down 2 days a week to force people to exist in the real world. And isn't that enough? Isn't that really all society needs to be cured of its deep set malaise? Harry, isn't that just to get out there?
Yes, honestly, kind of. Yes, you're whatever. Fuck it. That's Ready Player One. Lloyd, would you recommend this movie to anyone that you cared about?
I would recommend cutting contact with anyone that you know in the real world that has spoken positively about this film. just cut them out of your life. They're not worth it. Nothing to recover. This is truly the worst application of cinema that I have consumed in recent memory, and it was torture every second. But it was nice talking about it with you, Harry.
It was wonderful. It's always fun to kind of stare into the void and have the void stare back into you, find your deepest insecurities, all your worries about the world, and exacerbate them to a point that you go, you know, the dystopia that we're heading towards, it may actually be worse than what we think. Lloyd, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing this agony with me.
Thank you, Mr. Movies. This was a great time.
Follow Void Howler on Twitter. Listen to Feeling Well Podcast, and I mean this sincerely. We were talking about this before. Feeling Well Podcast is literally my go-to road trip podcast. It's like hanging out with two pals. It's largely like a conversation that you feel like you aren't welcome into, but like the people are funny enough that you're like, you know what? I'm going to take this in. Because, I mean, that's ultimately what podcasts are, is you're just like, huh, me too, guys.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Something
All
about
that
you
is
and
required.
Ralph.
All that is required of the podcast is to exist, and that's what we do. It's me and my friend Ralph, and we, you know, it's just it's a podcast of just guys being guys and trying to figure out this big whole mess of a world we're in, and that is at Feeling Well Pod, and it's Feeling Well Podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So.
Listen to it wherever you can. Follow Feeling Well Podcast on Twitter. Turn those fucking post notifications on.
That's right.
And Lloyd, thank you again for coming on. Maybe with the help of our audience, but our combined audiences, I mean, we can smash gaming culture once and for all.
Root and stem. Inshallah.
Root and stem. Inshallah.
Thank you for having me.
So what epic
here.
Gaming reference should we have take us out?
Oh boy! What epic gaming reference could I have? let's do the countdown sound when you've lost in Street Fighter, and and it's like, and it's like your character is just bruised and bloody and it's kind of implied that you're dying, but you're not hitting that restart button, and why is that? Is because You'd rather just kind of shuffle off the old mortar coil than allow gaming culture 1 second more dominion on this shit can of an earth.
Oh man, that's a good way to go out, because it feels appropriate, because I feel like both you and me have experienced what can only be described as brain death.
Yeah, yeah.
Feeling Well Podcast, Void Howler, make it end.
Ha 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 ha.